and welcome to The Underground, the official podcast partner of Glee 2025. I'm Phil Wright, and together with my co-host Kate Turner, we took our podcast booth to the Glee show in Birmingham to capture a snapshot of the industry and take the pulse of what's going on in the garden sector right now. The science behind ensuring you're growing healthy plants is always moving forwards. In this episode of The Underground, we catch up with Steve Harper, at the time of recording, the relatively new managing director at Grass Gains, and we also speak with Simon Taylor and Helen Thomas from Empathy Plantworks. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Bill.
Afternoon, okay. Steve.
Afternoon.
Yes. So welcome back to The Underground. You've been a guest before and with your previous roles with Southern Trident and with Responsible Sourcing Scheme. But this is the first time you're joining us as the MD of Grass Gains. How's that switch been?
It's been great. The Grass Gains guys, they're so infectiously about their product. I mean, they just buzz all the time.
Right.
Joseph, who's one of the guys, directors inside the business, he's almost, I've described him to everybody as the Duracell bunny. He's just full on all of the time. And that's what the whole business is like.
Yeah.
And I think from my perspective, this is kind of the third startup business that I've gone into.
Right.
And I love that because I guess I'm a bit of a generalist. So the fact that I can go in there and help the guys with their processes and get all those kind of things.
Right.
But I have the experience on the sales and the marketing and the operations.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm adding value to what they're doing.
Brilliant.
So what was it that made you want to take on the Grass Gains Challenge?
I think I'm led by product. I always want the products that I bring to market to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the background for Joseph and Mark as the two kind of main guys that brought the business together is they are groundsmen. They were groundsmen. Their business. So
right.
Mark was a groundsman with Arsenal, the Emirates Stadium and the likes. And,
mm-hmm. Right.
And they still have it. We have a sister company called Premiership Lawn Care that still looks after pitches and cricket pitches, football pitches, all those kinds of things. So the products that they've brought to market are all professional products that they've brought and then they've kind of just developed them or just brought them to market. So some of the products we do, like our Black Edition,
mm-hmm.
we sell the same product to Premiership grounds that they use on their football pitches.
Right, wow.
So we know the products work.
Mm-hmm.
They're used by professionals and trusted by professionals.
Right, okay.
So that's the Henry Lansbury connection.
Henry Lansbury is an ex-Premiership football player. Didn't play for any of the teams that I support, so that's fine. So he's kind of Arsenal, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, which is great because it's a good point of conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But having that kind of in there as well, and he's created a bit of a social media persona under the Lawn Lad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps us push ourselves out there into the market as well.
Okay. So let's start with the products then. So what makes Grass Gains different from the usual lawn feed and seeds brands that we see on shelves?
It is all about quality. It's all about making sure the products are the right products. So I'm not knocking any of the competitors' products, but a lot of them are a series of fertilisers and chemicals that have been bound together to do a specific job.
Mm-hmm.
Where these guys come from, they're looking beyond that. So they don't just look at, we're going to put some nitrogen on and make the lawn green. They're looking at the biostimulants and the likes that are in there. Because if you think about grass, it's a plant like any other plant, but it's the most stressed plant because we walk on it, we have the dogs wee on it, they play on it. So actually the addition of things like the biostimulants to help deal with the stress that the grass deals with makes you going to get better results as time goes by.
Can you just talk a little bit about what a biostimulant is for people that might not know?
Yeah, so biostimulants are naturally occurring enzymes that and fungi in some cases that plants produce and plants can take up. And actually, more and more recently, scientific evidence is coming that you can almost get a plant to grow and survive just by giving them biostimulants as opposed to giving them fertilizers.
Right.
So it deals and it basically stimulates the hormones in the plants to perform and helps make them more resistant to stress.
So a bit like a mycorrhizal fungi,
absolutely.
Which we know about for trees and shrubs. And
exactly that.
That's interesting. My first ever job within horticulture was looking after bowling greens.
Oh, okay.
So I come from a grounds beginning. So this is, it's interesting talking about this for me. So, Steve, tell us about the exciting new products that you're launching at Glee this year.
Well, we've kind of developed two strings of products this year. So we've added a couple of products into our lawn care range.
Right.
So We know that our products are used by all kind of lawn care users, whether they're beginners or more advanced lawn care users. But actually, we want to encourage more people into lawn care. So we've created a product called Total Lawn Care. So it's a child and pet friendly product, but it's all about suppressing weeds, getting the green growth that people want, and then also using bacillus, which helps break down moss. It kind of suppresses moss as well. But it's child and pet friendly, hasn't got any herbicides or pesticides in it. And it's just kind of introducing people in with the view that through the social media work that we do and TikTok work that we do, we can then encourage them up the ladder in terms of using the other products. Mm-hmm. We've also launched another fertiliser that has a lot more bacillus and things like triple superphosphate in, which helps stun moss. So it's there as a primary fertiliser, but again, it will suppress the moss. So that's what we've done on the lawn care. I suppose the big thing for us was we stepped into plant food.
That's a new step.
A new step. So I kind of explained to the guys, look, you're all experts in lawns and we'll carry on focusing absolutely on lawns, but I know something about compost and therefore I know something about the bits that we need to add to it. And you know my background as far as peat-free compost is concerned. So we've launched, we've kind of rebranded a little bit. We took a long time about this one, Phil, in terms of marketing. So we went, we took Grass Gains and we thought about what brand for the plant market and we went Plant Gains.
Oh, nice.
Must have taken a long time to come up with that one.
Absolutely. So we've launched a plant food called Bloom.
Right.
And it's specifically aimed at peat-free compost.
Right.
The problem we have at the moment is the market has moving peat-free rapidly, but we're just selling the same legacy plant foods to it. All of the peat-free elements, whether you're using coir or wood fibre or bark or whatever, absolutely stacked out with potassium.
Yeah.
And there's far too much potassium for the plants already. And you take the legacy plant foods, they're just adding more potassium. Mm-hmm. So we've launched a plant food that has all the nutrients and trace elements but doesn't have any potassium.
Right.
And we've also added magnesium. And Kay will know this, but magnesium, it's a great mineral that allows the plants, when they're under stress, to take up the other nutrients. Because if they have too much potassium, actually it stops them from taking up nitrogen and phosphate.
Right.
But this doesn't. The magnesium helps them take up those other nutrients. And we've just found stunning results. You do not need to all that added potassium.
Right, okay. So, Kay, I've got a question for you then.
Yeah.
So if you have too much potassium, what visible effects does that have on a plant?
Oh, all sorts. Well, you'll get yellowing, you'll get wilting. I mean, it's just not a happy plant, and eventually it will. It's not fatal, but it will just eventually die, and you'll just get a lot less. Because what potassium is really good for is fruits and flowering. So what you'll get is a lot less blooms.
Okay, right. Okay, that's good, because I'm not a horticulturalist, so that's good just to understand that. So you've introduced this product right now. Why is that so important, do you think, in the current landscape?
Well, environmentally, it's the right thing to do. We're moving peat-free, and I think everybody agrees that that's the right thing for us to do. We need to take the consumer with us, and one of the problems that you see at the moment is lots of consumers are saying that they're failing with peat-free for one reason or another. So some are failing in the first instance because the peat-free isn't very good, and we know there's a problem there, and we're working on that under responsible sourcing to try and bring a standard in. But one of the other problems, exactly to what Kate has said, is people will start feeding with a legacy plant food. For the first 2 or 3 weeks, they'll be getting good results from it, but that build-up of potassium, because they're keeping to add in, will then start leading to yellow leaves, wilting. It's exactly what I've seen in the trials, and a reduction in blooms. But because they've bought the compost, they've started feeding, initially they're seeing good results, they're now sitting looking at the plant going, what's going wrong?
Yep.
Because they don't understand it. And so we're setting our consumers up to fail.
Yeah.
So hopefully with Bloom, and hopefully the market takes note and starts following us, we're trying to give them the right thing so they have success and they're constantly happy.
How do we get that through to the consumer, though? Because with a company that I used to work for, did a lot of market research and found that just such a few, a tiny percentage of people realise that you have to feed your plants. So is there anything you're doing differently that can maybe get that message across?
We're going to be very, as well as social media,
because
we're getting more and more followers every day and we're going to carry on telling that story. But as well as social media, we are going to spend a lot of time with investment in terms of point of sale in store. Because that's the point where you can't communicate this kind of stuff on a TV advert or whatever.
No.
Not that we're big enough yet for that, unfortunately. But in store, I think we can communicate the message, and that's where we're going to go for. We're going to really highlight the design for peat-free and highlight to consumers, and also work with retailers, train retailers. One of the things that's come back over the last 2 days is they want, once they understand the message, they want to train their staff to be able to communicate that message because they didn't understand it either. Yeah.
Well, Alan Roper was talking about that, actually, that he didn't understand about the problem with potassium with peat free.
I think those that are in it should understand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably do understand it. But it's something that we've been working on. When I was in a priest company, Southern Trident, I took potassium out of all of the feeds that we were putting into our compost because I knew we didn't need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think everybody's cottoned on to that yet. But it's the more we shout about these things, and I'm sure the market will follow, then the consumer will slowly learn.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about grass gains in general here, but the packaging, the messaging, it all feels very different from your usual garden brands. Was that intentional from the start?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I think where they've come up with the word gains is from the gym, and you see the gorilla flexing his muscles. I think that's kind of where they've taken it from. Joseph always describes the packaging as trying to look a bit like a protein shake.
Right.
So that's kind of why we've gone down, one of the reasons why we went down the pouch route rather than boxes.
Yeah.
So we have tried to make the look and the feel about the product so it does look different on shelf. It has good reasons for being in pouches as well, because the boxes don't degrade and the consumer can reseal the packaging, all those good things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But actually that kind of initial, does it look like a protein pack and something a little bit different, was part of their thinking when they came up with the brand.
So I've just got a question. As a female in horticulture who knows quite a lot, you've done a lot about lawn care, for me, the kind of muscly is a little bit off-putting. Have you done any kind of market research on how, I mean, we know that mostly it's males that look after lawns, but how are you going to encourage more kind of women to kind of take up the lawn care mantle?
I think you're probably right. It probably is a little bit... It is a little bit male, and I've spoken to a number of female buyers about it. And generally, well, in fact, without exception, they've kind of accepted that the mass market for this is
male.
So focusing it against a male buyer is probably the right way to go.
Okay.
It'll be interesting as we step into plant food, because we're using exactly the same logo other than the word plant on it, is we are going to move into a more female area.
Right.
But I think the fact that we've got lots of flowers and bright orange and purples and whatever, I think that softens the whole pack a little bit away.
So Grass Gains positions itself as a challenger brand. How does that influence what you do and how you show up?
So I think it is a difficult position to be in as a challenger brand when you're coming into it, and you've got to do something different.
Yeah.
And I think social media is the way that we're doing it. I think two things that we're doing. Social media, we're on it all of the time. So whether it's LinkedIn talking to retailers or Facebook, Instagram and TikTok talking to consumers. And we're doing TikTok lives almost on a daily basis.
Really?
Yeah.
Goodness,
I mean,
me.
Joseph, when he's working in the office, packing orders, whatever, he'll be on TikTok live talking to consumers while he's doing it and have the camera set up. So we are building an ever greater footprint on that, and we use that then to drive consumers into retailers. So we have online forums for our products, the likes of Amazon. We have our own website, TikTok shop, etc. But actually everything that we do online, we make sure the pricing is the same price as what's going to be in a retail environment. So we're not trying to undercut retailers, because ultimately we want bricks and mortar. And Joseph, particularly when he does TikTok, is pushing people to go, where are you from? This is the retailer in your area, because that's what we try and do.
Right,
and we work with their social media teams as well. So it's almost our first conversation is when you get to about, well, what are we going to do as a package? Well, we want to work with your social media team to push the product and the brand out there. Because we haven't got £5-6 million spent on TV advertising, so we've got to come about it a slightly different way.
Yeah.
But it's a very different way of working, isn't it? And I think you need to be almost a particular type of person to be able to pull that off. So there's a lot of people would really struggle with doing what Joseph is doing, you know, being the face of the brand and just constantly talking about it, and this is what I'm doing and this is what it does and this is why it's so good. It's a skill, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. And it's nice for me because it actually allows me to step back and concentrate on other things, because in most cases of the businesses I've been in, it's like Steve's the face of this company.
Yeah,
and he
absolutely.
Needs to go. But Joseph, from a consumer perspective, is absolutely the face, and a lot from the sales perspective as well. So it's great having that person in the business that can just go out there and do all of that.
Yeah.
Right. So do you think you were brought in almost like as don't mean this to be derogatory, but like the grown up in the room? you know, to have that more overview experience. Yeah,
and there probably is an awful lot of truth in that, and I don't think the team would see it as being derogatory. I think they have. I think that they want to scale up, mm-hmm. and they're a young family business.
Yeah,
and although they've got some successful businesses behind them, particularly on the grounds kind of thing.
Right.
Going that kind of next corporate level in terms of dealing with other retailers is something that they need to step up to. And I think that's part of the reason for asking me to come on board, which, great.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So what's been harder than you expected in trying to disrupt the market?
I think the big difficulty in the market is the big boys kind of blocking the market out.
Right.
So they... if you look at them, and we all know who they are without naming names, but they have huge rebate deals and special net pricing, and they dictate that they have a certain amount of shelf space and everything else in return for that. And that's quite hard as a disruptor brand to undercut that and say, well, no, you need to give us some space as well. We need to push, mm-hmm. which is part of the reason why we went down the route of FSDUs and things in the first place, because we don't need shelf space. We can have off shelf and we can generate the sales and prove to you that it's the case. I guess an analogy I was thinking about the other day about this was from when you kind of asked me the question was, if you look at some big global dominance like Google,
mm-hmm. yep.
and they're being sued for their dominant position in the marketplace,
mm-hmm. right.
actually, I see that's completely wrong, because as a consumer, I can go anywhere I like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to use ChatGPT more often, but if I wanted to use Yahoo or whatever else, I can go and do that. If I'm a consumer going into a garden centre, the space is dominated by two or three big players.
Mm-hmm.
I now, as a consumer, have no choice because those manufacturers have blocked out the retail. So I walk in and it's a shop selling the same product every time. Actually, for me, that's more, and I don't want to say anti-competitive because that's a bit strong, but you know what I mean? It does make it hard for a disruptor brand to break through that and not give the consumer the choice that's out there, because there's lots of great products out there.
Yeah.
So how are you challenging that? How are you getting yourself into the garden centres, into that retail space?
So we have to create the demand. So, again, communicating with consumers, one of the things that we say to regulators to them is, look, if you can't buy it locally, buy it from us online.
Right.
But actually, do us the solid and go into the retailer and ask for the product.
Right.
Say to them, we want to buy this product from you, but you don't stock it. Hopefully, we can build the momentum up.
Absolutely.
And we are doing it. There's been a number of times when I sat down with buyers and actually I haven't had to sell the product particularly, because they've had demand come through, or they've seen the product on TikTok and seen what we're trying to do. And then turning around and going, actually, Steve, go through the products with us, but we're bought into this. We just need to understand a bit more detail on it.
Yeah.
And I think that's our way of breaking through, one of our ways of breaking through.
Okay. So, I mean, you talk there about response from buyers. What generally is the reaction that you're getting? Is it excitement, or is it scepticism, or somewhere in between? What's
I think genuinely it's a mix of all three.
Right.
I think curiosity gets us the meeting.
Right.
Scepticism kind of gets the questions coming, and excitement is what we leave them with.
Right.
Nice. I like that. Well done.
So, away from lawn care, you're still chairing the Responsible Sourcing Scheme. what's the current state of play in the peat-free transition?
I think, in a single word, stalled.
Yeah.
I think we desperately need the government to do something. And the government, as we all know, has got a lot of priorities at the moment and a lot of things on their minds.
Just a few.
and that seems to increase on a daily basis. But somehow we have to find a way through, because it's become really unclear. Those retailers that have made the move, and there's great retailers out there like B&Q, like Mike Burke's down at the Castle Gardens Group and whatever, that have gone peat-free.
He's brilliant, yeah.
And their view is, we've gone peat-free, we've done the hard work, now we're pushing our consumers down that route, and we're not going to step back from it. But we know that there are a lot of peat-based composts out there, and they're using the peat up, and they're competitively on price, and retailers want to make the margin, and I get that completely and utterly. So there is a bit of a stalling there. The HTA is kind of pushing for some kind of answer from government, which I think is positive, and discussing that. But it would be really good if we could sit there and go, these were the dates. I think we can rush it for retail, because I think we're really there.
Right, okay.
I think for the commercial, they do need more time, and I buy into that, and I'm with them, because commercially they need to do the right thing at the right time. But we need to move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's next on the agenda for the responsible sourcing scheme, and what do you want for the wider sector to stay focused on?
I think for the responsible sourcing scheme, we're constantly updating the scheme and making it more and more relevant. We look at other schemes around the world, and we believe that the responsible sourcing scheme is leading the way. And so I want to open some communications with the guys that are in Europe that have got similar schemes and kind of get them on board and realise that actually we're already five steps ahead of them, and they need to come on board, with what we're doing. The bit of work that is rapidly progressing, and hopefully we're going to be, I'd hoped we'd be there by now, but we're nearly there, is a quality standard. The responsible sourcing scheme is trying to make itself more relevant, so we're about to relaunch our website, put much more information onto the website, again make it easy for the consumer to have a look at how responsible one product is versus another product. But one of the big problems that we have, and we all know this, is qualities of peat-free. Some are great, some are less great,
some are not so good.
And once this quality standard comes out, not only on the bag will you be able to see how responsible it is, you'll actually be able to see whether the product works or not. There will be an accreditation mark that says this product
works.
And you will only be able to put that product on when it's been independently tested and proved that it does work.
Right.
Although that's quite hard with some composts, isn't it? When, you know, it's almost a living, breathing thing. So it's going to be different. Last year we had all that rain that obviously affected some compost. This year it's been really dry. So it's a much tougher thing than saying, you know, this dishwasher detergent works, isn't it? How do you kind of approach that?
It is difficult, but I think there's other things that we need to do. So we need to make sure part of that accreditation is that manufacturers batch code their products so that we know when it's been manufactured. We're encouraging consumers to buy fresh products, because then it's much more likely to do what it's supposed to do. And we need to encourage retailers, and this is a conversation we began having over the last 12 months or so, is rotate your stock. It was interesting, I was talking to a buyer earlier who buys food, and rotation of stock is one of his core priorities, obviously, because it's dated. We need to do that with compost. Compost needs to be rotated. Buying 200 pallets in January and then working your way through it for the next 12 months is not the way to buy peat-free compost.
No, if you're that consumer that gets the one that's been at the bottom of that pallet, you know, from January, and you're buying it in September, it'll be good.
No.
No, absolutely.
So, final thoughts for Glee this year. What are you hoping to take away from the Grass Gain stand? That's quite a difficult Grass Gain stand. Have a few gin and tonics, that gets even harder.
Well, easier in some ways. I guess we want to make people that lawn care and plant food doesn't need to be boring.
Right.
That we can actually bring some excitement and fresh energy and innovation into that area of the market, because they are the stalwarts of the market, aren't they? The triple actions are lawn care, the kind of plant foods that we've had historically. And we kind of want to push the old guard and bring some new change into that.
Are you still running, Steve?
I am. Yeah, for my sins. I've got a half marathon in 2.5 weeks'
time.
Oh,
my goodness.
Right.
So, yeah, stepping up the distance at the moment.
Have you been going out in the mornings?
Yes.
While we're here. Fantastic. What a great way to finish. Right, well, thank you so much for coming on, Steve. It's been really good catching up again, and wish you all the best for the rest of the show.
Absolutely. Good luck with Grass Gains.
Thank you, guys.
And I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Simon Taylor and Ellen Thomas from Empathy Plantworks. So welcome, both of you.
Thanks a
lot. Thank you. Hello, hello.
So I know that before the show, you've trialled big news for Glee, new products, a B2B portal, Emily, the advice assist, a virtual assistant, new packaging, and also show offers and all sorts of things. What should visitors make a beeline for?
I think if you come to the stand, we'll take you on a journey. Because, you know, this year we have got new products, a new ordering portal, as you just mentioned. But most of the time when people come onto the stand, we found last year, is what new products have you got? You know, because they know of us. They know our key products, our hero products like Root Grow. But what new products have you got? And this year we've gone all out. We've got, I think, 9 new products that we've introduced to our ranges. We've introduced a houseplant range under the banner Green Room.
Okay.
So that's something to come and have a look at.
Oh, I like to.
Yeah, it's, and we've got all of the products are now in new packaging, So we started the transition about 12 months ago into a new packaging style, and it's been very well received. We've extended the biofertilizer range, and Root Grow, the old favorite, is still there, but in new packaging. Everybody loves it.
So, Helen, can you tell us about the new products that you've been bringing out? Can you go into the science a little bit more?
I can go into a little bit of the science, yeah. So some of the products are joining our existing range. So for the last few years, we've actually been producing natural biofertilizers for many years now.
Yep.
But slowly over the last few years, that range has just grown and grown and grown. Okay. So we have a brand new tomato and vegetable granular fertilizer. The idea with that is you can just put it onto the top of your veg trugs, your beds, your raised beds, work it into the soil. That breaks down slowly over time, providing drip feeding nutrients, but also boosting the biology of your soil. Okay. So as a company, I'm not sure how familiar listeners are. So we have the Root Grow, the
mycorrhizal.
The mycorrhizal fungi, which are fantastic in terms of connecting to the roots of plants, growing off into the soil, making that large secondary root system. We also produce bacteria. So beneficial, these are beneficial bacteria that actually work with plants to gain a whole host of benefits, including solubilizing nutrients, making them more available, and also fixing nitrogen from the air. So we include that in our biofertilizers as well. So we have the veg feed, we also have a hydrangea feed, which is granular, and then we have a couple of new liquid feeds for Acer and olives.
Very specific we're looking at, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. So we've a lot of our products have actually come from conversations we've had with people within the industry.
Right.
And they come to us and say things like, we really like your range, but do you have a feed for this particular plant group? So we go away, we look at different formulations, obviously always biological, and then we bring these new products to market. And also, I was going to say, our houseplant range is so exciting. I love my houseplants. All biological. So we've got some liquid feeds, which are fantastic. They're pump and feed. You can just few pumps into the saucer or onto the soil of your houseplant, water it, all ready to use. And we also have some granular feeds as well for the houseplant. So, a fantastic new range. It's exciting to be able to talk about.
And have they been formulated specially to work with peat-free composts?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything we do has been with peat-free compost in mind. We actually, this product was launched last year. We have a compost improver designed specifically for peat-free compost that people can put into their compost and also for grow bags as well. But all of the other products, we're trying to work to boost up, just get the best out of your peat-free compost.
Okay, so where do these sit in store for maximum attachment rate? So is it with the compost or feeds or plant care aisle? Where do you see them sit?
Well, the Root Grow product is very famous for being an attachment sale with plants, all plants. And interestingly, I was just talking to a customer this morning, showing them the biofertilizer range and they're all plant specific, as Helen was alluded to there.
Okay.
When we first bought Root Grow out, they said, maybe you should do one for this plant, one for the other. And we said, no, Root Grows for all plants and any plant. So we kept to that word and it still remains the same. So Root Grow in itself as an attachment sale is there for every plant that gets sold. It's like a plant would not want to leave a garden centre without its favourite lifelong partner. With the other products, as Helen said, they're kind of like consumer driven. They would go into the garden care sector. But now you've got more plant specific products that we've developed for certain plant groups. Then if you're a good garden centre, you'll merchandise them with those plants. Olive tree feed with olive trees, aces, and so on. And it's become a bit of a trend, but I think it really helps the consumer as well. Because Mrs. Jones, as we might call her, will go into a garden centre, I'm buying a climber, do you have a feed for my clematis? That sort of thing. And you kind of like, well, you can use this, but it's not for a clematis. Well, okay, so we'll give you something for that.
Phil mentioned in his initial question about Emily, the advice assistant. What or who exactly is Emily? What questions can it or she answer well? And what are the limits?
Well, Emily's caused quite a stir. So The managing director of the company, Robert Patton, he's very innovative, and he's kind of fallen in love with AI a little bit. So we thought, well, what can we do? So about 2 years ago, we started to use AI for product information, and you can go to our... I'll talk about the portal in a minute, but you can go to our portal now and you can download videos that give you product information. He went away and thought to himself, well, why don't we actually have an AI interaction or something you can interact with to answer gardening questions? Mm-hmm. So he went away and thought about it, and he came back a few weeks later. He went, hey, look at this. And it was pretty special, pretty amazing, actually, I must say. But... you can ask her, she's trained to answer any gardening question. And so if you asked, for example, to change a tire on a Vauxhall Nova, she'll say, I'm sorry, I'm a gardening assistant.
Right.
But it uses similar technology to AI that we're becoming more familiar with. So it goes into a sort of what's called a large language model. And she goes and looks for the information that you've asked for and then brings it back to you and delivers you an answer. The subtlety of it is you can train her to suggest products.
Right.
So Emily at the moment is unbranded, free to use. Okay. And all of us sitting around the table can use it. You wouldn't see any product recommendations. You wouldn't see our brand on it. But if you said, Emily, how do I, what plant can I use in a shady area of the garden? She'll have a minute to think. She'll come back with her answers. And within the answer, she'll say, if you're planting this tree, it might be an idea to use root grow because it will help the plant establish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that ability to suggest things in the background.
Now, for somebody like me, whose trade is as a horticultural consultant, the idea of Emily fills me with horror because she's taking my job. Mm. Do you see it as a gimmick, something just to catch visitors' eyes, or do you think this is something we're going to be seeing more and more of?
Firstly, I think your role is really important. I don't think it'll ever go away.
I have to say that.
Yeah. I think, AI says, do we need designers anymore? Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Because you need the creative mind. AI can go away and do things. You've got to treat it like an assistant.
Right.
In the case of Emily, it's for consumers to use on the spot, in the moment.
Yeah.
So they haven't got access to your deep brain.
No.
But what you have in most garden centres, there will be the Kate who all the staff go to when somebody asks a question.
Yeah.
And I've had two or three garden centre staff when I've gone back in to see them, and they actually come to me and they say, oh, Emily's great. I don't need to keep asking Kate every time somebody says...
Kate likes to be asked, though.
Yeah, I know. She can't answer everything, but I can't.
We're going to divert too much.
but she is there. But it's for the consumer and for the staff potentially to use. So, but we need to embrace this sort of thing, and I find it really interesting. I even ask, what parallels in history are there where things like AI are changing things, and we have to evolve and develop with those.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what changed in history of the been? Let's take designers for one thing. Before the internet, you didn't have web designers. So it created new jobs. And I think things like AI will create new jobs and help us expand our knowledge on a lot of things.
I hope so.
Don't worry, Kate, you're fine.
So, Helen, is there the idea that shoppers will actually be able to use Emily in store?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a little bit like, so I will go and Google things on my phone constantly. it's just a little bit like that, really.
Yeah.
So that's how I think of it in my head, that you can, if you're in the plant area, if you can't see a member of staff, you can scan this QR code, you can have a look on your phone, ask the question and just get some real-time advice, which obviously then... hopefully you'll take that information and then go and talk to real members of staff sort of for the bigger projects and things. But just that instant, in the moment response that you can get from Emily,
Fantastic. So you mentioned towards the beginning about the fact that your products are all in new packaging.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's something, obviously, as a designer and sort of run marketing agency, I'm very interested in saying.
Yeah, we're we're sort of always looking, we're always looking at the market, and we're always looking at ways we can change our packaging to help it stand out on the shelf. Also the move towards eco-friendly packaging. So we're always looking to, every time we find out about anything that is more easily recyclable, that maybe comes from a pre-recycled source, we're incorporating that always into our packaging designs. But in addition to that, it is about creating something cohesive that also stands out on the shelf. So we've got some really beautiful packaging. Some of it I've seen for the first time at this show. Okay. We've got our new bulb starter that's got this beautiful imagery of tulips on, and it just really pops. And when you see like our full biofertilizer range all lined up together, I'd encourage people, if you're able to come and see us at the show, or alternatively pop into a garden centre and have a look at the display altogether. It does look really striking and fantastic.
And have you updated all the messaging on the packaging as well? Is that...
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that's always evolving. So as more information, we have a full science team. That's one thing we have as a company, as well as the sort of sales marketing side of things. We have a full team of scientists who...
They've got R&D.
R&D, So specialist soil scientists. And,
they're here today, actually. Our lead scientist is here today. She'll be here, Amy, with her colleague, Marina. And she'll be here for best part of tomorrow. So if you come to the stand and they're around, you can have a really deep insight into
detailed chat.
So actually, that's going to lead me into this question, which is, tell us a bit about the research that goes into developing the new products.
Well, I'll say one thing first, then I might let Helen take over. Because for the first time this year, people say to us, "Well, what's in your products?" It's a mycorrhizal fungi, beneficial bacteria. Oh, is it? Well, you can't see it. No, you can't see it. I get chastised sometimes that I sell something that's invisible, which is... I was in our lab, it was a couple of years ago, actually, and I opened the fridge door in the lab, and there's all these sachets lined up in all different colours. And I found myself... So I said to Amy, the head scientist, she said, "Well, the bacteria's." And I said, "All different colours." She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, why are they different colours?" She said, "Well, that's what colour they are." and I sort of found myself. So on the stand, if you come along, you can see what's in our products, because we've actually got the sachets that they're produced in, which are IV.
Yeah, little IV bags.
They're called little IV bags because they're sterile. They have to be sterile. And there's a pink one. There's a beige one. There's a kind of a clear one, and there's a brown one. And when they're in their billions, they have a colour. They have, so you can actually see them, which is something you never see. So you can't see, obviously, their shape, but the colour is there. And there's no dye in there. That is the bacteria. So the science and research, Helen might expand a bit on that.
Yeah, so quite a lot of it, I would say, comes from our interest in kind of commercial sectors, so things like farming. So bacteria are routinely used, actually, not so much in the UK, but in other countries, that technology. So the idea of applying mycorrhizae to your fields to act as natural fertiliser. And we've done a lot of research kind of with UK growers and UK farmers to develop agricultural products, but then that filters into our...
Well, it often does, doesn't it? Agriculture then filters into the retail.
And the gardening. So we're in this really unique position where we can be specialist, and we can bring some of those innovations into the gardening sector.
Yeah, just recently, you know, off the back of some of this research, you think, you know, will it ever come to anything? And, you know, farmers are beginning to adopt it, but quite a big company in the agricultural sector very recently have placed a significant order for bacteria to treat a specific crop, which I can't say exact names, but on air. But it's really quite significant, and it's something that the amount of work we do in research for farming and agriculture and helping crops grow more sustainably transposes into hobby garden. We use all that technology for hobby gardeners, and We try to get the message across, hence biofertilizer. You know, it's a product with a living organism that will improve a plant's nutrient use efficiency. It's pretty simple. And once you get it, and you start to swap over, you go, yeah, we need to be going in this direction.
It's amazing because it offers, in terms of like sustainability, the long-term benefits. Yeah. If you're setting up a community of bacteria and fungi, good bacteria and fungi within your soil, that is going to exist for years to come, mm-hmm. in a way that just purely putting some nutrients on there, yeah. It's kind of not even comparable,
and
really.
People, I suppose, are understanding it more because we're talking about gut health so much.
Absolutely.
Supporting your bio. Yep. It's becoming much more
I used to call it Yakult for plants when I worked worked with the bacteria. Yeah,
right,
it's very much, similar ideas that we all exist in this big ecosystem.
Yeah.
I sometimes use that analogy. The root of a plant is not unlike our stomach turned inside out.
Yeah, no.
I know it sounds
it's
a bit
a
gross,
nice but, thought, is it, but it's, yeah, now
it's,
I get
it,
that.
It sounds, when you say it, it sounds a bit gross. You think about it. We put food in. The food is exchanged from our stomach into our body.
Yeah.
Turn our stomach inside out, and essentially you've got the root of a plant, which is exchanging nutrients from outside and bringing it in.
Yeah.
So all that our gut biome that you were just talking about that we try to look after, a plant and most living things are seeking the best way to exchange nutrients to keep them alive. And these, this technology does this for plants, and you know it's proven on a global scale. Soil health is just like it's massive, and this direction that governments are going in. You know, they're saying, you know, we've got to look more carefully at soil health, soil biome. You know, we feel like we're very, very knowledgeable about it, and we need more people to know about it. Hobby gardeners in the UK got direct access to it. Yeah. It's incredible.
No, it's, I mean, soil health is the most important thing, you know, rather than just sprinkling a bit of synthetic fertilizer that's just for your plants, get that soil. I mean, I talk a lot about mulching.
Yeah. Oh, I love a bit of mulch as well. It's the foundation.
It is. So if you're somebody who mulches a lot, would you still benefit from using your bio products, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all works quite sympathetically together, like especially with, for example, the mycorrhizal fungi. You use that at point of planting. So you're getting that into contact with the roots. Then any nutrients you're getting broken down from your mulch is going to be acting to feed that
fungi.
So we're talking about some sort of quite complex things, so mycorrhizae fungi, beneficial bacteria, biofertilizers. If you're working in a garden center and you're looking at your teams of the people working in the garden center, what sort of training or what was the minimum amount of training that they need to be able to explain those things to the customers?
Well, I think we do offer lots of resources. So I would say if you were in that position, you had your team, you wanted to sort of educate them about all of the products that we do. So visit our website. We do have information on there. Contact us as a company because we can put you in touch with your local area rep. Someone can arrange to come out and do some staff training with you. We also have a range of videos, sort of other resources that
come and collect our catalogue. And on the back page is a QR code to a 15-minute training session on the whole product range.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So get down there, get a catalogue, and you'll be trained up on a... But we use videos now. I mean, I don't know if you get social media and it says, I can do my training sessions in this amount of time. We adopt that technology and we use it. You know, we really try to not be afraid of using what's available to us now. But there's still nothing better for me than to go to a garden centre and train the staff on the products.
Absolutely.
And that's how genuinely how we started out with Root Grow. And it's brilliant now. I mean, I started doing this 15 years ago, and I'd go into train a garden centre and I'd look at them and say, I'm going to talk about mycorrhizal fungi. Anybody heard of it? And they would literally stare back at me with a blank face.
Now.
And I would exchange, you know, and I would exchange the information and they would go away. And now I go into a garden centre and they immediately go, oh, you mean Root Grow? And I say, yeah. Do I need to be here? But then it's great because say, well, what do you know? I say, I know it does this, or I saw David Attenborough talking about it, or I've seen it on a program, and it's in the Wood Wide Web, and
the Wood Wide Web, that's fantastic.
And you're like,
love
you go, you've got it. So, but do you know what's in this packet? Oh no, tell me more. And then you go into the product.
Right,
so
yeah, it, brilliant.
It's, you know, and you know, without it's all that education started with us. You know, we sort of like the word mycorrhizal fungi. We say we introduced to the gardening lexicon.
Right,
is one of the favourite things our MD likes to say. So, and we're going to do that with biofertilizer. We're going to introduce the word biofertilizer to the gardening lexicon.
Lovely. So your products are a great add-up or, you know, an attachment sale. Imagine I work in a garden centre. What's your best tip to help me maximise those sales?
I think it's a combination of, so we talked a little bit earlier in the podcast about where it's displayed. So if you can put our products near plants, that is fantastic. Sort of dual location is always really good. We do little root growth sachets. They can go, if they can be in the till area, that's fantastic. But also just recommending it with, for every time you plant, basically. So the root grow, you can recommend that with pretty much everything in the garden centre. Anytime anyone's taking a plant home, take home some root grow. Also with the associated fertilisers. So a lot of them are named for the plants that they grow with. So if you're buying a rose, take home some rose biofertilizer. Hopefully it's fairly kind of self-explanatory, but it's
I always
it can be recommended with everything, can't
it? I always worry it sounds it's a bit corny. I've said it a few times before, but you go many garden centres at the till end when you walk out, they sell batteries, which is fine, you know, because you know, people need batteries. It's a pick-up purchase, so it's that last thing. Batteries! I need batteries. For me, a product like root grow should be on every till end in every garden centre, because if you think about it, mycorrhiza connects to the root system. It starts to grow into the soil and it provides power to that plant for its lifetime. It's like batteries for plants.
Here we go.
Get it on the till ends. Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, Kate and I were at the Glee Road Show at Monkton Elm.
Yeah.
And one of the big discussion points there was about the fact that garden centres are suffering from increase in national insurance, minimum wage increases. And they were looking at, you know, their business, and they were saying every purchase we need to increase the basket spend. I think it was only about 79 pence, wasn't it?
Quite small.
It was quite small. Yeah. But if they can do attachment selling with your products like that, you know, that easily.
Yeah. Well, as you've asked that, you know, direct commercial question in that sense, you know, what I just said there, you know, it's like get it on the till. Constantly telling garden centres, put it on the till end. It's kind of like for every plant you sell, you can be selling some root growth. So earlier on this year, one garden centre actually said, we're going to run, you probably know who they are when I say this, an inter-garden centre competition. And they all selected, each garden centre selected one product that they wanted to push. So they decided, one of them sectors decided they'd do root growth. And they had root grow on all the till ends, and they quadrupled sales.
Wow.
And it's just like...
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Well, you're kind of like... And they did not cannibalise any other sale.
Yeah.
It was a genuine add-on sale.
It was an add-on.
That's
and because
really good,
usually the you know, the root grow being amongst the fertilisers or hopefully in the plant area somewhere, when it's actually put in front of somebody, the last thing they see as they're leaving the garden centre with a trolley full of plants is like a product that helps my plants grow.
Yeah.
They've got their fertiliser. This is something different. It's not a fertiliser in that sense.
Yeah.
If I want a bigger carrot, I need more fertiliser. If I want to grow an ornamental plant or a rose, I need mycorrhiza. It's kind of that simple in that sense. So, and it genuinely did increase basket spend. So you asked the question, there's the answer.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in to see us today and for telling us a bit about what Empathy are up to. And it's been really fascinating. Loved our chat.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, love to see you, Phil. Thanks, Kate.
Yeah,
really enjoyed the chat.
Please do subscribe, like, and review us on your podcast platform of choice. It only takes a moment, and it helps us to make this podcast possible. If you found the episode useful, do spread the word and share it with your colleagues. Signing up to our mailing list at theunderground.fm will mean that you'll receive insights and news all about new episodes straight to your inbox. The Underground Podcast is produced by Wright O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for home and garden brands. The production at Glee doesn't happen without a team of people behind it. So my thanks goes to Matt Meehan and Katerina Albanese from the Glee team for their help and assistance. Technical production was by Paul Withers, and their production assistant was Josh Wright. On-site videography was by Ben Holmes, and graphic design and marketing support was by Claire Appleby. The podcast booth was constructed with the support of Toby Noyce of Extreme Graphics. And of course, my thanks goes to my brilliant co-host, Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. Thanks for listening.